The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
I'm Robert Venditti, the writer of Exo Man of War and Green Lantern, and you're listening to Nerdy Show.
The following episode of Nerdy Show was recorded while literally on the road. Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
I'm Tony.
I'm Trench.
And we're on the road.
Yeah, we're coming home from Charlotte, North Carolina. We're driving through Georgia right now. We're at mile marker 80 on I-95. And
Heroes Con is firmly behind us.
We've just been to Heroes Con all weekend long. Did some panels. We shilled some merch. We
met some fine fans.
Yep, some nice folk.
I got to rub elbows with some pretty cool comic peoples.
Yeah.
Which they were confused at first when I walked up to them and asked to see their elbow before I rubbed mine against it. But it worked.
Yeah, that's why we try not to let you out to interact with anyone ever. This is a weird month for us, you know? We've actually, like, all the shows we've done this month have all been micro-recorder recorded things. Like, I don't think we've had a single in-studio recording all month long.
You know what? That's okay. We are your nerds on the field.
I guess that's sort of a little, just a note for anybody who's tuning in for the first time. We usually record in a studio. This is just highly abnormal. So, Heroes Con. Heroes Con was good. What did we do at Heroes Con? Well,
we moderated four different panels.
That's right. First among which was the Valiant panel, which is moderated by Aaron from A Comic Show, a Nerdy Show comic show.
He did a great job from what I hear.
Yeah, I was there. He did. And in this episode, we're going to be playing you highlights from the Valiant panel.
It's going to be like you were there.
And he did this panel with many of the prominent artists and writers from Valiant right now. And if you're not familiar with Valiant,
they're kind of the best shared universe out there right now.
Yeah, they were a comics company that was founded, I believe, in the 90s, perhaps the late 80s. And they're responsible for characters like Exo Man of War and Bloodshot and a bunch of stuff.
Shadow Man.
Yeah, a bunch of things that I, in the 90s, ignored because they kind of seemed like super extreme 90s stuff. Like, the only thing quite more extreme than that was the stuff coming in from Image at the time, like Savage Dragon.
It was very well received. Archer and Armstrong, which is one of the series they brought back, was called, it was still one of the best buddy comedies out there in comics. And they came kind of back with a vengeance.
Yeah. What happened was this dude who was a diehard Valiant fan, there's a photo of him. It says, like, kid birthday party. I don't know how old he was, but actually had a Valiant cake. Like, he was a big-time Valiant fan.
And we're not talking Prince Valiant. This is not the Sunday Funnies.
Yeah, and as an entrepreneur, he actually bought the Valiant name, bought all the titles associated with it. Some things they missed out on were things that Valiant had acquired from elsewhere, like Turok and Solar the Atomic Man. Those aren't part of Valiant anymore, but all Valiant's original stuff was retained, and he brought it back, and he brought it back with some big names like
Friend Van Lente,
Rob Venditti, people who know what they're doing, and as such, they don't necessarily like to call themselves this, but it is a good selling point.
They are the third largest shared universe in comics.
Yeah, like there's Marvel, DC, and Valiant.
Bam!
I mean, that's actually quite impressive. They've been around for maybe 2-3 years now.
Yeah,
and they've done good business. Like, they've maintained a certain consistency.
They do, what, 9 books a month?
Yeah, only nine books a month. But they've got a very, like,
a tight-knit group of creators.
I mean, imagine Robert Kirkman's Invincible, right?
Yep.
It's a thing that's been done largely by just him. There's been a couple spinoffs by other people. And it's a well-sized world, but they've done as much, like, world-building for Valiant in a couple years as Kirkman has in the entire career of Invincible.
And that's impressive.
Yeah.
And it's really cool, because what's nice about only having 9 titles and a very tight, very closely communicative group of writers is the crossovers, they emerge in a very organic way, and they do it in such a way that you don't feel like you have to buy every book to keep up with it. They've had a number of events in the 2 years they've been up, and I'm not suffering from event fatigue from this group of comics.
For a change.
Which is weird, because the status quo actually shifts and the characters grow, and they don't return to a status quo with a couple of name changes.
Yeah. So, and if somebody dies, this is true of original Valiant as well, they're dead.
Done.
And there's nothing, I mean, maybe years from now, when Valiant becomes ludicrously successful, they'll be just as, you know, intense as a Marvel or DC with all the crap they got going on, and people will come back left and right and whatever. But the edict of Valiant is if someone's dead, they're dead. If something big changes, then there's got to be a good reason to change it back. Like, it's small enough, it can actually be a controlled, concise superhero universe. So that's really exciting.
Before,
yeah, wow, there's a powerful stink in the road. It's not a skunk.
I think this is just Georgia. I don't know.
No, it's got to be like a paper mill or something. It's got a really...
Or a sewage treatment plant that has become sentient and is attacking the road.
It's a really rancid funk right here.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the benefit of the On the Road podcasting, Nerdy Show bringing to you.
You cannot smell this.
Oh my God.
We wish you could.
No, we don't. Why would you? I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, Trench. What the hell, man?
I'm wishing that on you right now, Tony.
That is true of you. Oh my God, you are cruel.
This is like maybe what it smells like a quarter mile away from the Bog of Eternal Stench.
You know what it doesn't smell like, though? The quality that Valiant presents.
No. Yeah. This is the antithesis of that. Okay, so...
Holy God.
But before we dive into the Valiant panel, other shit we did...
got to talk to Kevin Eastman.
That's right. There's a panel with Kevin Eastman. We talk about his career, the Turtles, and we're going to be playing that in a future episode as we continue our coverage of the Turtles' 30th anniversary.
All year long.
Yeah. If you haven't checked any of that out, we did an episode with Steve Murphy, who also is called Dean Klarain, his pen name, author of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Adventures, the series published through Archie. He's the most prolific Turtles author of all time.
Wrote more than the original creators.
Yeah. Then also for Turtles stuff, of course, there's our interview with Steve Barron, the director of the original film. That's not from this year, it's from a couple years ago, but hey, it's
equally impressive. It holds up.
Yeah. Also, it's the first for Heroes Con, the first LGBT panel. And this is hosted by Brian from Flame On, and the panel is about gay characters in comics and features some people who have been writing gay characters in comics since the 1980s, when it was considerably less accepted. The Hernandez brothers, Terry Moore, and then the more recent authoress, Kate Lee. So it's a great panel, and that'll be released via Flame On sometime in the very near future. Also, we did an Atomic Robo panel.
That went great.
It was great. It was awesome.
It doesn't exist anymore because Dr. Dinosaur stormed the room.
Yeah.
Lost to the crystals.
Yeah, it's not.
I was there in the room. There was a giant dinosaur who came in wearing a trench coat and a fedora with a corncob pipe for some reason.
That was a dinosaur? I thought that was an average, normal human being.
He had you fooled, Cap. He had you fooled. He also did was steal the radio waves that we had captured on tape with his crystal
pack. That's not how that technology
works. Ran away.
Okay. Yeah. Basically, shit got fucked up, and we don't have it. But it was great, and for all the handful of people who managed to stay there till the end of Heroes Con, because it was the last panel of the entire show, thank you so much, and you're awesome. Tune in for more Atomic Robo Nuts and Bolts coming soon.
Woo!
Yeah, let's see. We'll talk more about Heroes Con after the break, but here is the Valiant panel hosted by Aaron.
Enjoy it through your ear holes.
Hi, I'm Aaron Holland. I own a comic shop in Orlando, Florida. I do a comic show weekly video on Bleeding Cool and YouTube and all that. I also own a bar. It's pretty cool. I've been a big supporter of Valiant since the very beginning of, before the summer of 2012. They've just put out really solid stuff, the perfect package, the perfect marketing. And as a retailer, I have been very impressed with every move they've made so far. Because it's a tough market, and Valiant is kicking butt, in my opinion. Here's the guys. Go down the line. Brian Reber. He is their exclusive in-house colorist. And we have Josh Johns, cousin of Jeff Johns. He is an editor there.
Inaccurate. Just an editor. And everyone, this is Alejandro Arbona, our associate editor, who's managed to be late for two panels in a row. A new Valiant record for Alejandro Arbona.
I feel like I'm on The Price is Right. Tom Fowler, Quantum and Woody artist.
Yeah, please welcome Tom Fowler. Yeah.
Matt Kent, who is amazing. You know him from Rye, Unity, My Management, lots of good stuff. He's an animal. I don't know how he does all that work, but and it's all solid. It's all so good. It's weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
Personal assistance.
And then on the end is Louis LaRosa, who does lots of art. He does lots of covers, lots of good stuff. He did the cover to the Valiant Handbook for the Universe for the Free Comic Book Day. He does a lot of great artwork. Yeah.
If you're a big fan of Lewis, you're going to see him next. He is joining the roster for Harbinger number 25. And I saw those pages last night, and they're amazing, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
We're just going to talk to each other.
How many of you guys out here are reading the current Valiant stuff?
Oh, yeah.
All right. And of that, how many read the older stuff? You were there? Cool. Right on. I didn't read any older stuff. I was a kid. I mowed a certain amount of lawns and made a certain amount of money, and I had to get my Justice League and my X-Men, so I was not cool. I was not cool back then. But, man, this stuff is good now. How did this happen? How did you guys get headhunted? How did this become, like, this magic? When I toured the offices, it felt like... You guys remember CrossGen? Like, it felt like that type of mystique that CrossGen kind of wanted to say they were, with, like, this in-house everything, and everyone's happy, and everyone's putting out their A-game work. Even though it's, you know, not creator-owned, but it had this vision that everyone bought into and were excited about. It's like that without the, like, megalomaniac on top, you know?
Yeah, thanks for comparing us to CrossGen.
Yeah.
It was like CrossGen without the cocaine.
Right, right, right. Obviously, the books are all working. Obviously, this is a shared universe that everything just fits together so nicely. Everything's just running perfect, and it seems like no one is phoning it in. Like, a lot of times when you have... writers and creators, when they're not on their creator-owned stuff, when they're on something that isn't that, you might get more of like a watered-down version of them. And with Valiant, I don't feel like that at all. So
I'm going to jump in on that and say that it is that cool. And I'm going to tell you why. Like, so I went to the New York office for the first time last fall, and I went in there, and it's just a small office. It's almost bullpen style. Like, all the office doors are open, and it's just this group of guys, which half of them are here, you know? And honestly, I felt like this is... I imagine like what the Marvel bullpen was like at the beginning, you know, when it's Stan, Jack, and a few other guys, and it's there's very few characters, you know, there's like eight titles, and everything's working together, and everybody's loving what they're doing, you know, and I got that vibe right away, you know, it's totally different, and I've worked for every single publisher at this point. I mean, there's a few I haven't.
Right, right.
It's that vibe that makes it fun to write for, you know, and it's not like, here's what we're doing this fall, it's what do you want to do this fall, you know, that's the kind of thing which makes it exciting as a writer.
How did you get headhunted for Valiant? Like, how did that happen?
It's funny because I didn't know Valiant had come back. I was a fan of Valiant in the 90s, and I had read pretty much everything, you know, and my brother, who got me onto it, he's like 6 years older than me, and he got me back onto it in the 90s. He's like, hey, you should read Harbinger, it's like X-Men but it doesn't suck, and I read it, I was like, it's awesome, and Dave Lavin was doing the art, and I didn't know Valiant was back. I don't read many comics anymore, and so I just sort of was reading what I needed to read for continuity for DC and Marvel, and I just sort of sick of the mainstream stuff. And my brother called me up. He's like, hey, you know Valiant's back, right? And I was like, they are? What's out? He's like, XO and Bloodshot, and so I just started downloading them on my iPad, and I think it was around, I think Bloodshot issue 5 is what I was reading, literally, when Warren, the editor, called me, and he's like, hey, would you want to write a Bloodshot 0? And I was like, yeah, what happens in it, you know? And he's like, we don't know, we want you to write it. And I was like, well, I'm reading the series right now, like, I'm wanting to know what happens, like, I'm excited to see what happens next. And he's like, well, you decide what happens next, you know? And I was like, it was awesome, you know? Like, I was coming at it as a fan, I was just quietly reading those, I wasn't looking for work. I think Mind Management is what Warren was reading and he liked, and then that's why he asked me to do it.
What about the Mind Management ads in your books for Valiant?
That was Warren's idea. That was Valiant's. He said, do you want to do an ad swap? And I was like, yeah, but it's got to be conceptual. Like, it has to fit my book, you know? And so it had to be something that would fit in the reality of what my book is, which doesn't have any ads, you know? So I did like a backup story that was like sort of a... It worked as an ad, but it was actually a story about a guy who was trying to create these weird Valiant characters, you know, and they were all failing in this universe, but they work in the other. And then for the Valiant ad, I did... What did I do? Oh, I did... I can't remember what that ad was. It was very confusing working on it because I was putting Valiant characters in my book and my characters in a Valiant book, and it was...
Yeah, you did a crossover with ads. I mean, that's how, like, fun you are and Valiant is for allowing that. That's ridiculous.
It was all just a plot by us to own my management. So now
yeah,
we
they
do.
They do own it now.
I used to work at Marvel as an assistant editor to an upstart young editor of theirs called Warren Simons. Warren actually sort of recruited me and hired me at Marvel. That was my entree into editorial in the first place. And then he ended up leaving Marvel after a number of years there. Passage of time, westward the wagons. Warren was executive editor at Valiant one day, and they were growing and they were launching their line, and he actually called me and he said he trusted me and he always liked working with me and would I want to come edit comics at Valiant. And I said no. I said thanks, but I kind of don't really want to work in comics right now. And a year went by and then he called again and I said no. And then another year went by, he called again and I said yes. Yes, I do. Actually, I do. By that point, they had been putting out comics for 2 years and they were awesome. And I said, obviously, I kind of missed the boat here. I made the wrong decision. So then I did come to Valiant, and I was very happy. I've been very, very happy there ever since.
Mine's kind of like that, except for people saying no to me. I came to New York City to intern at Marvel Comics, and then didn't get the Marvel Comics internship twice. So then moved back to my home state of Georgia. And on the day I moved back, Sarah Del Greco called me and told me I got the Marvel internship. And I, after contemplating suicide for like 3 days, which is a joke. It's a very morbid joke. I ended up getting the Marvel internship, moved back to New York City, met Hunter Goranson, who's our marketing director. Finished the internship, worked under Nick Lowe, who's now the Spider-Man editor. Major influence on my life, really great guy. Came back, finished school, wanted to work in comics, didn't really know anything about Valiant, didn't really know where I was going to go, if I was going to try to go to Marvel or DC or anywhere. Hunter called me one night, and I knew that he was working for Valiant, and asked if I wanted to get dinner, if I was anywhere near, I think it was Greenville. And I said, I'm actually super near Greenville, where he was with his wife, and I was lying. I was 4 hours away, but I got in my pickup truck and I drove straight there as if like I was just like 15 minutes away and met him for dinner. I was like, hey, what's going on, man? We went out for dinner and drinks and I gave him my resume. And I was like, hey, if you work with Warren Simons, you could give this to him. And Hunter was a good friend and did. And then they brought me in. But basically by lying to Hunter and saying that I was only a 2 towns over at a fraternity brother's house instead of the 4 hours away in Athens, Georgia that I was how I kind of broke in.
So you went from intern to actual paid employee?
I did. I was there prior to X-Men number one, and then I became, the first editorial hire. Just back to what you're saying, it really is as fun as it seems. If making comics is a real privilege that we all take super seriously. We all bring our A game every day, and it's exhausting, and we butt heads, but we're all super close. I don't know if you guys have seen us around the cons or at the bars or anything like that, but we really do love and believe in the plan and believe in Dinesh and Warren, and it's been a real, real privilege.
Tom.
They called me.
Your book is so funny. How much of that is you?
All of it.
this is real collaboration right here. This is good.
Did the editor hire you? Did the writer put your name in? Was it just...
They called me.
I'm gonna jump in here and tell the story. So Jody LaHoop was the editor who developed Quantum and Woody and launched it with James Asmus and Tom Fowler. And then Jody ended up leaving Valiant to pursue his own outside interests. And so I ended up coming into Quantum and Woody a couple of issues.
I'm going to tell the more interesting version of this. which is that Jody called me out of the blue one day and said, hey, I work for Valiant. You ever heard of us? And I said, no. And would you like to do some covers for Archer and Armstrong? And I said, yeah, okay. So I inflated my cover price, and they said yes. So I said yes. And... Then we went, I did a few covers, and I started floating to them the idea that I could paint some covers, and they said, well, how much? And then I inflated my cover rate again, and they said yes, so I said yes. And they said, hey, we got this super top secret thing we're doing. You can't tell anyone. Are you familiar with a book called Quantum Woody? And I said, no. And I said, well, there's this cover. There's this goat in it. And I was like, okay. And I said, we want the cover, and it's like a goat head. And I was like, all right. So, yeah, it's going to have to talk. And I'm like, sure. And then after I'd finished that, they were like, you want to do the inside too? And I said, how much? And they said, well, what's your rate? And so I inflated my rate, and they said yes, so I said yes. And that was about that.
Making us sound like suckers.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I made James funny. So.
Jeez. All of you guys are currently at Valiant now?
No.
No?
It comes and goes.
I'm still doing covers, yeah. Cool. I'm still doing covers and stuff like that.
This season of Valiant seems to be coming to like a boiling point with the issue 25s, and it's exciting.
Bring us home, Reber.
For me, as a colorist.
Damn it, Tom.
It's exciting for me to work for Valiant because I put in a lot of time over at Marvel in DC, and I was always the guy that got put on the young guns, the new guys that haven't quite been established. And those were all the guys that I got to color. I didn't get to color the big guns like Miko, mm-hmm. Carrie, Clayton, Henry, and stuff like that. So over at Valiant, I get all these wonderful toys to play with, all the new projects, and I have a lot of fun because these are the guys I always wanted to work with, and Valiant gives me that opportunity.
Ryan was our first exclusive colorist in our company's history.
I was headhunted here at Heroes.
Nice. Is that why there's some editors here at Heroes now?
It's a great con. We always look forward to meeting new talent and everything like that. So, yeah.
Cool. Lewis?
Me, it all comes down to Warren Simons. I probably owe my career to him. He championed me at Marvel years ago and got me on The Punisher. And years later, I left the industry and changed careers. And he called me out of the blue in, 2011? It's like, hey, we're starting Valiant back up, and I want you to be involved. I'm like, oh, I don't know, I don't do that anymore. And I was like, I like your stuff, whatever you could do. He started pitching me concepts and stuff, and having me draw character designs. And Warren's enthusiasm is real infectious. And I liked Valiant growing up. XO was one of my favorites, and Ninjak. I liked all that stuff. So it was like, scratching that itch again that I had to get back into drawing. And he kind of reignited my love for comics again and drawing. So I owe a lot to him. And like you were talking about with Valiant, is it feels like everything's precious that you do. It's not like they put 60 books out a month and just turn it in. No one will notice. We got so many damn books coming out that no one will really care. Just turn it in. But with Valiant, they're a small group of titles. And, the small team of guys working on it, it's like everyone cares about it. You can't, you don't want to be the weak link in the chain. You got to do your best. I've become a better artist working at Valiant just because of that. I'm always inspired, and that I'm in such amazing company there with their other artists and the scripts I get too. I just, I'm like, I want to do these characters justice. I want to do these stories justice. And, he's given me a lot of freedom, letting me draw covers, letting me ink myself and grow as an artist and develop, different approach and style. So I'm real happy to be where I'm at right now. I quit my other career to get back to comics full time because of Warren and the other guys at Valiant. So it's been the best professional experience I've had in comics up to this point. So I feel very lucky to be working with them on their characters.
Up to this point.
Up to this point. But things could change, Brian.
That's ridiculous, man. It's like you guys are paying them to say this stuff. I mean, it's just like glowing. What's your favorite?
We do pay.
Yeah,
we do
pay us. To say, just to say
especially
good
Tom.
Things about
especially
it.
Tom.
They right. pay them.
What's your favorite Valiant character to draw?
I try to find something about, I've drawn most of them at this point, from doing as many covers as I have, and I try to find something cool about each of them. I like XO, I guess, just because that's what I liked growing up. His Conan meets Iron Man, and that was just, he's got an awesome look, and I just love that about him. But I like Bloodshot a lot, too. Punisher meets Wolverine. I kind of like tough guy characters with a lot of grit. I probably wouldn't feel comfortable drawing Quantum and Woody. I did, and I had fun with it, but I don't know if I could draw a whole comedy book like Fowler can.
Few can.
All right, Matt, what do you got?
I'm just going to say, I'm going to say, is everybody reading Armor Hunters? Is everybody still reading it? Here's what I like about Valiant. That's like the big event thing, right? Well, that big event stuff is born from like Rob having this idea and then us having a meeting, and it's like, well, who wants to be involved, and how do you want to be involved in it, and then how do you want to be involved in it, and sort of spitballing ideas back and forth. And it's just like, to me, I feel like we're like 13 years old around the kitchen table trying to predict, you know, like coming up with like Wolverine ID stories or something, but you know, but we're adults and we're coming up with like more sophisticated things, and we're, so it's like friends working together is what I feel like, you know. But anyway, Arm Hunters is awesome, and I just finished the Unity issue. I don't know what number it is, but it, the first 10 pages of that are some of the favorite things I've ever written for anybody.
Wow.
And so there's like no words, and it's just this cool thing with a giant robot, and it's awesome.
Who's drawing that?
I'm trying to not spoil anything.
Is that Braithwaite drawing that?
No, it's not.
Steven Segovia is the artist of that.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he's good.
But no, it's cool. And that sequence, I asked Warren, I was like, Warren, can I start out with like a 12-page action sequence that is in space and there's no words? And he's like, do whatever, man, whatever. You know, and then that's what it ended up being. It's like my favorite thing I've done so far, and the way it's just cool. I think, to me, Valiant is like a publisher for writer, whatever. You know how they say, like, he's an actor's actor? Like, to me, Valiant is like a creator's publisher.
So your favorite scene is 12 pages where you don't say a word?
Well, there's no words, yeah. Exactly.
That is a writer's publisher.
We're doing Armor Hunter right now, like Matt said, and it has a Unity tie-in that takes place and shows the events of the Unity team, what they're doing. Joe Harris is doing a Bloodshot tie-in, and Joshua Dysart is doing a Harbinger tie-in. So Matt, do you want to talk about kind of the collaborative process of doing a mega event that's, we try to make very organic and very much, you know, actually interconnecting?
Yeah, no, I mean, it happens during that big meeting. Like, last year was the first year I'd been to one of those. It's really open-ended, you know? If Quantum and Woody aren't going to fight the Armor Hunters, you know, it doesn't make sense to have them do that, you know, unless it's
go
funny.
Ahead. Is it funny? I don't need to draw it.
If it was funny to do that.
Funny enough, I don't think I'm giving too much away if I say, we almost did. Almost happened.
Yeah.
It didn't end up happening, but it almost happened. There would have been an Armor Hunters Quantum.
But that's why I like that everything is on the table, and then it's like, well, whatever makes sense stays, and whatever doesn't, you know, you're not forcing anything, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and that kind of thing is, usually there's like a lead. Like, I think when Unity started, I was taking XO and I was sort of spearheading that. And then Rob was like, okay, I would tell Rob, I'm like, here's what I want to do. Here's what Unity's going to do to XO. You know, what's XO going to do? And it was almost like role playing in some ways. And so with all of those things, all the crossovers, it's kind of like that, where one guy's is sort of coming up with the main thing. Like, Rob's doing Armor Hunters now. So he's like, well, here's what they're doing. You know, and then I'm like, well, here's what Unity is going to do to react to that, you know, and then it really is. It is like a role, like weird role playing where you just, I'm like, here's what my team would do, you know, and then what is Armor Hunters going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just go back and forth, and Rob's like, well, here's what I would do. I trump that, and we're just going to, we're going to kill Ninjak. And I was like, okay, well, Unity won't do that. Then we'll do something else. Warren asked me if I wanted to do Rye, you know, that we hadn't done the year 4000 stuff yet. And so he asked me to sort of pitch Rye and what would I do with it, you know, and I gave him this huge document. Honestly, I did more work on Rye than I've done on anything in my life. Like, I wrote more about that and thought more about it and did more, like, groundwork to just do that first issue than anything else, because he had to figure out what happened, you know, over a 2,000-year period and where everybody is and, like, what happened to all the characters, you know, and you've got Eternal Warrior who doesn't die, so, like, obviously he's still going to be around, and then the XO armor, that's, you know, what happened to that, you know, is there's all these things that are super fun, you know, like, that's what's great to me. It's almost like it's time travel, you know. Without the time travel, it's just, here's your window into this year, you know, and you can see what happens. So I think the year 4000 is probably going to end up being rolled out. Like, I'm rolling out Rye, which I try to start small, you know, with just, you know, like this teenage girl, and then you sort of see Rye as this weird legend. You don't know he's real, and then we'll pull back, and you realize, well, he's in Japan, and then you pull back, and you're like, Japan's floating above Earth, and then you'll pull back, and you'll be like, oh, what's happened on Earth, you know? And so slowly over the course of a few story arcs, you know, we'll get to see more and more and more, and all of that stuff is there, and a lot of that was in my pitch, and I don't know how much is going to be for real, you know. A lot of that was like, I went through the whole universe, and I was like, here's what my idea is for every single one of those characters, you know, so I don't know how much of that will actually happen or be shown, but it's figured out in my head.
That was a character that was obviously in our toy box, and obviously it was a character that people were always asking about a lot. And it was really just a question of when we were going to roll out Rye, not of whether we were going to do Rye or not, or do the year 4001 or not. It was just a question of when the time would be right, when the right combination of creator, you know, creative team with concept would come around.
To me, it's scary pitching to you guys because it's not like, hey, in October, we're launching this book, you know, give us what you got, which is like, okay, as long as it doesn't suck, it's starting in October, you have to do something in October, you know, which everything I've pitched for you guys has been the opposite of that. Like, what's your idea? And if it's good, we'll do it and we'll figure out where it fits on the calendar, you know, which is completely different. Because then it's like, well, if it sucks or if it's just mediocre, then you're just going to ask, you might ask somebody else to do it, and I really want to do it, you know, so, but it makes you up your game, and like, this has to be the best thing possible, you know, and you wait for a good pitch and a good idea, and then figure out where it makes sense.
And to piggyback off that, yeah, with what you were saying, there was some debate over whether or not we'd go to the future. That's because, you know, we like to grow organically, and we went from one title to four titles. Next year we'll have nine titles. And 2 years ago at Heroes Con, it wasn't time to talk about 4001. It wasn't time to talk about Rye. It was time to talk about Exo Manowar, Harbinger, Bloodshot, and Archer Armstrong, and ensure that those books were a success. Thank God they were. And then we got to open the toy box and go to Rye. So that's kind of how it grows. And then next year we'll be sitting around, you know, talking about Delinquents and Dr. Mirage, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later, and that sort of stuff. And the year after that, we could be talking about Armorines, Psylords, anything like any. All those are possibilities. But we grow organically so that everything's success, so we don't have one book that's just tankered off and gone by the wayside, and then we don't have the cohesive universe that we feel like we've built pretty well over the last 3 years. We're very appreciative of that we live in the house that others built. So we've made a concentrated effort to make sure we bring back all those names. Bart Sears, Bob Hall, Jim Calfieri just did a cover for us. Sean Chen, Bernard Chang, all these people have all come back and done work for us because we're big fans of them, and we work with the people that we're fans of. So they've all come back, and there'll be more to come.
You should get Quesada to come back and draw Ninjak for you. Need you up for it.
Yeah, I don't think he's working in comics a lot these days.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll be sure to shoot him an email.
Christopher Priest and MD Bright, who created Quantum and Woody, are doing a new Quantum and Woody story set in their original continuity, basically extending that storyline decades beyond where it ended. It's called Q2, The Return of Quantum and Woody. It comes out starting in October. So now they're middle-aged. They've split up. They're retired. They had some kind of mysterious falling out that we don't know at the beginning of the story what it's going to be. And then they have to swing back to action. They have to put on their ill-fitting costumes again. They're kind of, you know, they have stiff joints and they're creaky and they have bad backs. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that's just one example of one thing we're doing.
This whole thing has been dangerous. It's dangerous to start a comic book company in 2012. It is dangerous to roll out, you know, four series instead of starting with a whole bunch to guarantee a bunch of sales. It's everything we do has been dangerous, but it's all been a plan, and that plan has been dictated solely by the writers and the story and the editors, not by a marketing team, not by a movie that's going to come out in 2015, none of that. And so,
well, did he just announce the movie's coming out in 2015?
No, I'm saying it's not by a future movie that we want you to start digging, like, you know, like, we want you to get super into Torque because the Torque movie's coming. That's not how it works with us. And it does work that way with other people. Don't, you know, fool yourselves. Torque movie's coming. I'm here to announce the Torque movie. It's going to Channing Tatum is Torque.
Is that a sequel to the old Torque movie?
Yes.
Yeah. By which I mean the movie Torque.
It's all been very dangerous, but we take the stories where we think they need to go to be true to the story and true to our audience. And that's why it feels dangerous, but there is a plan. And so far the plan is working and super fun to watch.
Because, like, if you're working for Marvel and DC, you always sort of feel like you're just working on their property, but on Valiant, you feel like you have an investment in the success of the company. So you want to make sure that you're doing the best story, best art that you can.
So we spent a lot of time at the Nerdy Show booth. It was next to, the first time ever our booth was next to Brian, mostly due to a happy accident that was not, I mean, it was not great.
It was an accident that was sad, yeah. But it was happy for us because otherwise we would have been stuck in the ass end elsewhere.
Yeah. Scott, artist of Atomic Robo, was unfortunately not in attendance as planned, so we were able to commandeer his booth. And
by commandeer, we mean completely pirate.
Yeah, and hang out with Brian, which was great.
For us, I don't know about for him.
Well, I've been looking forward to meeting Brian for 11 years since I started reading 8-Bit Theater. So
this was a big day for Trench.
How was your Heroes Con experience and your Brian Clevenger experience?
I managed to not completely fanboy out on him. So I think that was a good thing. He looked like he appreciated it. He seemed to really enjoy talking with me about Atomic Robo. I know I enjoy talking with him about it.
What was the rest of your con like there, Mr. Trench?
I spent a lot of it sitting next to you, Tony, and that is an experience.
Isn't it, though? Some good news for all you Lightning Dogs fans.
Oh, my God, the amount of concept art we got done this weekend.
Yeah, Tony and I were doing a lot of doodling and talking with Brian and all that. So, you know, unlike our usual Lightning Dog stuff that we record, I mean, this one was largely visual anyway, but we are planning a finally getting the gang together for a new Lightning Dog. Yeah, getting the pack together. And if, for the uninformed or uninitiated, Lightning Dogs is
awesome. Check out the link on the episode's page. You're going to learn all about it.
At lightningdogs.com. It's a concept we came up with. It's the ultimate in 80s and early 90s cartoon action figure. It's testosterone and bright color injected road warrior nonsense. It's a cartoon show that never happened that always should have been. It's the ultimate of everything you ever loved and cared about.
We would describe it more, but we don't want to deprive you of witnessing the inception. Listen to the episode. You will not be disappointed.
We accidentally created it on the air and then continued to accidentally create it over the course of several other episodes.
And accidentally over the weekend, we created designs for the rest of the cast. You who are initiated, we've got Narissa, we've got Kane Corso, Kid. They are designed. We have started working out the glampire.
These are not finals, but they're a lot of really solid preliminaries that we're going to bring to the next episode. And for those of you who are following the Lightning Dogs Facebook page, where we dump all these sketches as we've been doing them over the months,
prepare for a huge dump. This is just giant,
get ready for
steaming
a mammoth dump.
You are going to need like 6 doggy bags to pick up this pooper scooper.
It smells better than the stuff we passed, you know, a couple.
Yeah, oh my God, considerably. Yeah.
Beast Town sized turd. Who is incidentally probably the only member of the crew that
we haven't drawn.
I drew him once, but it just kind of looked like a kind of the opposite of a wolf bear. Like the percentages of wolf and bear just swapped a little bit.
How was your Heroes Con, Cap? What did you get to do? Anything fun outside of your panels?
You know, I talked with a lot of cool people. And you and I sat in on the webcomics panel with Jeff Smith, the creator of Bone, and Mark Wade, the creator of...
Jeff Smith was there.
Lots of things.
He was pretty. Like his artwork. Oh my God.
I wouldn't say he was pretty.
I think Tony has a man crush.
I do. Jeff Smith is amazing.
I mean, Bone's one of the greatest independent comics of all time, so...
And Razzle was a lot of fun to read.
Yeah, you just read Razzle.
I did. I liked it a lot, and I'm looking forward to reading his Tukey comic.
Yeah, Jeff Smith turns out, and this was news to me, maybe it's news to you, listener folks, Jeff Smith has been doing a webcomic for a little while now. It's called Tukey, and it's about cavemen or something. I haven't read it yet, but I look forward to it. It looks really good.
I can't wait to dig into it. It looks awesome. And then
Mark Wade was talking about his Thrillbin website. We had him on the site, on our site, some time ago, like a couple years ago, actually, at this point, when he was debuting it. And
it's been going strong. They just recently switched over to a subscription-based model where you're getting premium content for the price of a single comic every month.
Yeah, it's like you unlock hundreds of issues and all new content for like $3 or something. So,
and it's from... Slick. This isn't like your average pay-to-play comic site, because when Mark Waid brings his friends to an online site, you're getting like high-quality writers and artists bringing their particular sensibilities to the fastest emerging form for creator-owned material.
And also, Thrillbent does weird stuff with webcomics. Like, they play around with what can be done with comics as a digital medium, so it's pretty cool seeing panel transitions in a kind of like animated way. Otherwise, we you know, talked to some cool people. I met with Rick Spears, the guy who does the Auteur, one of my favorite recent comics. It's this really fucked up, really fucked up story about egotistical personalities in Hollywood, and
that doesn't make you feel as dirty as, say, something like Crossed.
Yeah, it's still really fucked up, but I don't like Crossed, and this is fucked up, but it's also good. whatever.
Well, I too got to have a good time while we were there.
I was about to ask. The highlight, I think, for you was when you got to sing Bohemian Rhapsody with the guy on the other side of us from Brian.
That actually was not a high... I did enjoy myself singing Bohemian Rhapsody at the top of my lungs at a convention center. But no,
I'm so glad I missed that. Let me just say.
You were lucky, Cap.
Yeah.
Everybody around him just fled.
We cleared the aisle, but me and Michael Watkins, our other booth mate, who is a fantastic art dude, everybody should go check him out, had just way too much fun digging into that. And I got to meet up with Kevin Bulk again. I'm a big fan of his. He does Interrobang. Everybody should check that out. His Sucks to Be Ouija series just wrapped not too long ago, and he's doing this Ensign Sue series, which kind of tackles the concept of Mary Sue's.
That sounds cool. When's that happening?
That's happening now.
Okay.
It is gone for 3 volumes, and it takes place in Star Trek.
I would suspect it would.
Got to meet Ryan Ottley of Invincible, who I'm a big fan of, and his work is phenomenal.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. He's a good one.
But one thing I do want to touch on a little bit is a weird bit of HeroesCon, because there seem to be a lot of cancellations this year.
Yeah, man. They came up against some adversity, I guess. There were a number of other conventions elsewhere. I don't know why people would have, say, double-booked or reneged, because generally creators love HeroesCon. I have no idea.
It's one of the top cons out there. Wade sings its praises. Temple Smith, who was here again, sings its praises.
Jason Aaron, who wasn't here but is on a consistent alternating every other year schedule with HeroesCon, sings its praises.
People love HeroesCon. So to see names like Rick Remender and Trad Moore just not be there was weird.
Yeah.
The show was still great. I had a blast.
I heard there was an engagement that happened at the Sex Criminals panel. I love me some Sex Criminals. I wasn't there because it actually happened directly opposite the Kevin Eastman panel. I wondered why it wasn't quite packed in the Eastman panel, and now I know why, because
Sex Criminals is amazing.
Yeah, like pretty much like getting all of the praise that it deserves. So some folks got engaged, and apparently Fat Bottom Girls was played, which is of relevance if you're a reader of the book. And someone probably reported on it, maybe Bleeding Cool. I got to meet Hannah from Bleeding Cool, the editor-in-chief there. That's cool.
She's a very nice lady.
She's been working with us a lot recently with our E3 coverage being syndicated over there.
Fun fact I picked up, Matt Fraction's parents subscribed to every single one of his comics, except Sex Criminals.
That is a fun fact.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, so Nerdy Show stuff. Here's what's up. All of our big events are done for now. Great. That's awesome. You know what that means?
We're going to be providing more regular Nerdy Show content for your listening pleasure.
Yeah. Right now we got our Dungeons and Doritos support drive going on. That is where you get to create or decide the next campaign we'll play in Dungeons and Doritos, our epic tabletop role-playing podcast. We have a number of categories right now. You can either add your own or you can bid on these, and we're entirely listener-supported. So if you like our episodes, then please just send even a little bit of money, even a couple bucks our way. And if you do that, you're not just helping us. You're not just getting a chance to pick a campaign for Dungeons and Doritos, but we'll also send you a ludicrous amount of free stuff that's been support perks throughout the years.
It's practically another archive of Nerdy Show content at this point.
I should probably count how many items are in there. It's a lot. It's a ridiculous amount.
Hey guys, this is Cap coming to you from the studio. Since we recorded this episode on the way back from HeroesCon, some things have changed. So, in the interest of giving you the most up-to-date information, I'm going to be cutting in and out of the conversations about the support drive that we had in the car and add in helpful information from the studio. Currently at the bottom of the support drive with $25 is the Glampire's Crystal Web.
There's some sort of Lightning Dogs affiliated-esque influence. Let's say influence. Lightning Dogs influenced kind of parody episode of D&D.
Okay. I'm down with that. That has been entirely backed by Hoodoo Voodoo.
Yeah.
Who really likes these contests.
Yes, he does.
Then there's D&D Resurrection. That's at $30 and is sponsored by Kausabaloo, Barry Eye, Hoodoo Voodoo, and Benjamin Britt. Benjamin Britt said, $5 on D&D Resurrection, want to see it happen.
Which is a crossover between Dungeons & Doritos and Ghostbusters Resurrection, a popular theme. There's also a category that was listed in the on the forums, but no one has backed it yet, which is a sort of a Pokemon crossover as well. The suggestion was kind of like a medieval fantasy version of Pokemon, which is actually pretty interesting idea.
I unleash erotic pangolin.
Oh, man. it's going to use tackle.
Then there's VMAC and his Holy Monkeys at $34, sponsored by Delphi, Hoodoo Voodoo, and Garrier. Then, something brand new for all you murder mystery fans, Law and Disorder at $45 from Muckraker and Jeffrey Voss. Muckraker said, $35 for Law and Disorder, $20 for my favorite that's already been submitted, Perchance to Dream, which we'll talk about shortly, and a microsode for the next donor. Keep it unpredictable. That's how I Roosevelt. And Roosevelt indeed he did. The next person who donated got to decide what we talk about for a future microsode. Here's what Law and Disorder is all about. After a lengthy time traveling, our weary adventurers stop and are permitted to rest in the mansion of the business leader and mayor of a nearby town, provided they don't disturb the small party taking place downstairs. Grateful, our heroes agree and sequester themselves to their rooms until morning. When they're awake, they find that the owner has been murdered, and the building has been put in a lockdown by hard-nosed and somewhat cliched detective Dip Tracy. Can our heroes help find the killer and prove their own innocence? They find themselves trapped in a classic murder mystery and suspicion alongside political rivals, business competitors, and jealous lovers. Jeffrey Voss thought it was super cool and said, "I love the E3 coverage, toss my cash into Law and Disorder." And yes, we went to E3 and we saw lots of cool stuff there, and we tried out a lot of games that aren't coming out for a while, and we did podcasts and we did videos. If you want to check that out, just go to nerdyshow.com/E3 2014, or there'll be a link on this episode's page. Let us know what you think. Covering E3 is a heck of an ordeal, and we're looking for feedback. Next up is Perchance to Dream at $60, sponsored by Sage Zero and Robert Rangel. Sage Zero said, "Love what the Nerdy Show crew has been bringing. A little show appreciation, but also as seed money towards Perchance to Dream." And Robert Rangel liked it so much that he sponsored it. But let's go over to the guys in the car to find out what it's all about.
I would imagine it has something to do with Shakespeare.
It's kind of a, each individual character gets trapped in their ideal world, but it's all a dream kind of a thing.
So in other words, all the shippers between Jamella and Jennifer will be able to put that fanfic to rest and have the real thing.
Or something, we'll see.
Or something.
I mean, like, her brain's pretty complicated, and she might be the kind of person, she can imagine quite a lot.
I believe it.
But at the end of the day, she's also her own worst enemy, so you never know. I think that the idea is it's kind of like one of those classic Mad Hatter Batman stories.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, where everything goes really good, and then they all kind of realize they're dreaming, and then kind of have to get out of it and kind of fight together to get out of it. Which seems pretty cool.
We'll see. I think it's kind of like the Rick and Morty episode, the Inception episode, where they go in the math teacher's head and it's...
And it just goes deeper and deeper.
You can run, but you can't hide, bitch.
And finally, currently in the lead, A Blast from the Past.
Our last topic goes deep into the archives of D&D history.
Yeah.
And that is a suggestion from Triforce Mike himself. The Ape of 1,000 Dicks. Not actually Mike giving the suggestion, but it was
something Mike suggested way, way, way back in D&D history.
It warms the cockles of my heart to see that Ape of 1,000 Dicks coming back.
Ape of 1,000 Dicks is currently at $110, sponsored by Dorofago, Mauron, Louis Melancon, and Damien.
Yeah, why don't you pull up Dorofago's summary there?
Absolutely. A campaign suggestion from Mike once upon a time before the erotic pangolin. No idea about the ape itself, though. A large ape with 1,000 dicks, an ape-shaped golem made from 1,000 dicks. You know, I kind of already drew that at MegaCon a few years ago. Perhaps a King Louis-esque ape who simply wants to be a man-cub, so he goes around killing and pilfering the penises from previously operative people. That's an excellent alliteration, Dorofago. Bravo. Maybe emerging the Justice League in Futurama, a smart race of apes that has a seedy black market where human horn is sold as an aphrodisiac, and they have to get little Barty back. Oh God, Barty. Or little VMAC, or whomever was unlucky enough to get his harvested.
Implying that there's any conceivable way in the Dungeons & Dragons universe to reattach a penis, I don't know.
Isle of Mages, man. Then again, VMAX was already removed and reattached, so maybe Barty could get the rough treatment this time.
Hasn't Barty been through enough?
Would give Jamella and Lefty something to taunt him with. Or both.
But I don't remember VMAX's penis getting removed.
That happened.
When did that happen?
It was kind of a mic joke. And by kind of, I mean it was completely a mic joke.
Wait, wasn't it Chair's dick that got severed and reattached?
No, it was VMAX.
But this was just like an offhanded comment, right?
Offhanded comment that Mike was making during... You remember he had multiple personalities at that point still.
Right.
Though VMAC acknowledged it. He acknowledged that that's a thing that happened and that it came back. That happened.
Man, okay. I've got some problems I gotta fix. This is what the Nerdy Show Wiki's for, guys. So, your friendly neighborhood Nerdy Shows, don't forget stuff that happened, and we can tell you funky stories to explain some crap that some of our members said once upon a time.
Here's what the other supporters of Ape of 1,000 Dicks had to say. Louis Melancon said, "I think we need to find out what an Ape of 1,000 Dicks is." Mauron, who contributed earlier in the month but hadn't settled on a D&D campaign, said, "Cap, please put my $30 towards this. Mike would have wanted it that way." And Damien said, "Here's to the Triforce Mike-inspired D&D campaign. Much love to the crew. Much love to you guys. Thank you so much for all the support. Remember, we have a crap ton of possible support perks to unlock. We've just recently made our monthly goal of our bare bones operational costs. But beyond that, the sky's the limit. There's all kinds of awesome stuff that Nerdy Show can do with more money. And there's awesome stuff that you guys can earn if more money's contributed. So spread the word to any fans who might not be aware of the support drive and get in on this action. It's still very much anybody's game.
That concludes the amount of topics that are up there right now. Though I do need to give an additional shout out to a very special fan who found us at HeroesCon, Mr. Kyle Rolna, who has gotten all of our goodies for donating. Thank you so much, Kyle, for finding us at HeroesCon, and I hope you're enjoying this.
Putting a donation dollar in our magic box.
And you got cool stuff, man. You got cool stuff. Thank you so much for coming to see us.
Yeah, that's what's up. All right, so I think that wraps the episode, more or less.
Pretty much, just like we wrapped up HeroesCon.
Yeah. What's in store? Well, like I said, we're putting together a new Turtles episode. I don't have details on that yet. But we're
a lot of Lightning Dogs content, including a couple of pages of like comicry that I've been putting together.
The Call of Cthulhu show is still in production. It's going to start as soon as we can, but we're developing an original score for it, and it's going to be really, really, really good. I can't wait for you guys to hear this. It sounds so good. D&D is coming out this month. A new episode of Dungeons and Doritos, and the Flame On episode with the LGBT panel.
That's coming.
That's coming soon. And we're recording the Atomic Robo RPG. It's happening soon. That's coming out soon. And we're going to be doing a show with myself, Brian, Scott, and Mike, the designer of that role-playing game. If any of you are coming out to San Diego Comic-Con, Aaron and I will be there. We'll be walking around, hanging out. If that's a thing that you're doing also, hit us up on the forums or Facebook or Twitter. Let us know.
You guys can hang out together. It'll be like a party.
Yeah, we can do a Nerdy Show meetup. I like doing those. And I think that's it. Man, I'm so excited to like not be traveling for a few weeks at least because I'm exhausted. I'm really, really exhausted.
Have you even seen Orlando for longer than a day? In June?
I was there for exactly 24 hours between E3 and HeroesCon. Yeah.
That is our cap, ladies and gentlemen. That is our cap. He is so dedicated to your entertainment.
Yeah!
Yeah!
All right. So thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll be back with regularly scheduled Nerdy Show type stuff very, very soon. Look forward to that new episode of D&D coming.
I know you should. Oh, my God, you should.
Coming next week. And more cool stuff from there. Thanks so much for listening. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Tony.
And I'm Trench.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, hey, you made it to the end of the episode. Well, I've got some sexy secret things to tell you. Not really too secret. I do say them at the end of every episode. But if you liked what you heard, it is imperative that you follow my every word. First, I want to thank you for listening to Nerdy Show. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows in the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on iTunes, shopping at nerdyshow.com/store, or, most importantly, by directly donating to the network. Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show outtakes, dramatic readings, images, and other crazy stuff, and lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in. But if you really want to level up, find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming. Just visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine programs, community forums, videos, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes Store, and for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks. So to recap, tell a friend, donate to the show, and connect with the entire Nerdy Show Network crew online. We're glad to be your home for authentic nerdy entertainment.